I'm Marty Moscoe. Welcome to Radio Times. Flight attendants have always had a tough job, but in recent months, they've had to deal with a dramatic increase in unruly passengers who've gotten abusive and sometimes violent, mostly about refusing to comply with the mask mandate. We've all seen those videos of someone yelling and cursing at the crew and sometimes getting assaultive. According to the Dallas Morning News, a female passenger on a recent Southwest flight punched an attendant, knocking out some of her teeth. The FAA has instituted a zero-tolerance policy about following COVID protocols, which includes some hefty fines. Taylor Garland joins us by Skype. She is strategic public relations coordinator for the Association of Flight Attendants. That's the largest global union representing attendants. And Taylor Garland, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me, Marty, especially before this holiday weekend.
Well, exactly. And let me just make sure our listeners can ask you any kind of questions. You're going to be with us for about 10, 12 minutes. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at @WHYYRadioTimes. Any questions or comments for our guest? I wonder, Taylor, how much of a flight attendant's job now is de-escalating conflicts on a flight?
Well, even before the pandemic, flight attendants were de-escalating conflicts from time to time. But now with the mask mandate and just the general atmosphere on board, it's a constant battle on any given flight. And most of that, like you said in the intro, is around the mask mandate. There are still people coming on board who refuse to wear their mask or become combative with flight attendants when we ask them to simply pull their mask up over their nose and mouth throughout the course of the flight.
When we talk about unruly behavior, I mean, I can imagine what that covers, but from a flight attendant's perspective, what are they dealing with?
So, you know, every flight attendant will tell you that every single flight they have to remind at least one passenger to wear their mask, whether or not it's falling below their nose or they left it down too long after taking a sip of water or food. And that's just the mundane reminder, as they would remind you to fasten your seatbelt or pull up your tray table. But what we've seen, especially in 2021, these first 5 months, is that it has gotten increasingly aggressive. So there are instances of verbal altercations where it's raising voices, profanity, those types of things. And in a few incidents, not all, but a few, we've definitely seen a physical assault, and that ranges from a shove or a kind of slap in the arm, things like that, to what we've seen now with a Southwest flight attendant over the weekend, punch in the face and actually losing their teeth. And unfortunately, that is not the first time that I'm aware of that a flight attendant has been punched over the mask issue.
What kind of training do flight attendants then have to deal with some of these altercations?
Flight attendants are trained in de-escalation, so you might not quite understand why a flight attendant is being, in your opinion, so nice to a passenger who may be combative, but some of that are tools in de-escalation, lowering your voice, maybe coming down to where the passenger is. A lot of other times, if there's multiple flight attendants on board, another flight attendant may deal with the passenger. But unfortunately, Congress hasn't mandated self-defense training. So there is self-defense training that is provided by TSA and DHS that flight attendants can go to, but they have to do it on their own time.
And what would that involve? I mean, you know, we've all been on airplanes and we know even under the protocols, these are crowded vehicles with a lot of people, you know, cheek to jowl largely.
Well, first and foremost, the rule is to keep problems off the plane. So if you demonstrate that you're going to be unwilling to comply with the mask mandate or just be a general disturbance or a possible threat on board, likely the passenger will be removed before that flight even pushes back from the gate. But there are several different tools that flight attendants will use. And since September 11th, of course, we are the last line of defense in aviation security. But one of the things that your listeners would be good to know is that if a flight attendant needs help, they will instruct or ask passengers. Sometimes we have a tendency as humans to try to get involved, but that may escalate the situation further. So flight attendants will be very clear with passengers around if they need help from a fellow passenger in order to deal with an incident.
I'm glad you raised that because I was thinking, in fact, I was on a flight before the pandemic and there was a guy, clearly had had too much to drink. I was flying from Philly to Boston and I just said to myself, this guy's going to be trouble. And he was. And I watched the attendants, the crew really handle it in a, I would say, an exemplary way. But the impulse to get involved and to tell this guy to, you know, to shut up was really hard to contain, I think, for most of us on that flight.
Right. And I think what we're seeing, too, that's different than pre-pandemic times is that people, when it comes to the mask, people directly relate to their own safety as they should. And so there's a tendency right now to get involved because it's a personal offense to the other passenger. Whereas incidents before the pandemic, you know, a passenger wouldn't necessarily feel their personal safety is threatened. And so we've seen some people get involved and actually some of the masked passengers who were upset about another passenger not wearing a mask actually become the aggressor.
Wow.
And that's not what we want either. We want to de-escalate the situation, keep it under control as much as possible, especially if we're in the air and there's nowhere else to go.
How much is alcohol involved? Or are we just talking about people who just don't want to wear the mask, whether they're on a flight or, you know, walking around the airport or living their life?
Well, certainly we're dealing with people, you know, the mask issue has been politicized throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, even though we know from scientists it's the single most important tool to stop the spread of COVID-19. And obviously now we have the vaccine, but not everyone is vaccinated. We're only about 50% of adults, but there's plenty of kids on board as well. But alcohol has always played a role in unruly passenger incidents. It was likely the single biggest cause of unruly incidents before the pandemic, and it's still playing a role today. And that's why we've cautioned airlines in reintroducing alcohol because they had pulled back service throughout most of the pandemic because of the concerns about spread and things like that. But alcohol definitely is a factor. And it can accelerate some of these situations.
Are you saying that flight attendants don't want to serve alcohol anymore on flights?
Well, it's not serving. It's the concern that alcohol can cause situations from going from a small problem to a big problem. And they create touch points and things like that where people are pulling down their masks, which then make it harder to enforce the mask mandate. That said, most of the airlines are reintroducing some amount of alcohol back into the economy class by the end of June.
Tell us what dip and sip is for those of us that want to fly. What is dip and sip?
Yes. So dip and sip is a term that we've come up with. And that is for if you we understand you're human, and especially if it's a longer flight, you need to drink some water, maybe eat a sandwich, things like that. So when you're either drinking or eating, take a sip, dip your mask, take a sip of water, and then pull it back up. And same with bites of a sandwich, right? Take your mask down, take a bite, and pull it back up so that you're not having prolonged periods of having the mask off. And that will really help us as well, because if you're very conscious about pulling your mask back up, even in between bites, you'll be less likely to forget to pull it up at the end of that food or drink.
The FAA has this zero tolerance policy. Has that sort of added to some of the friction on flights?
You know, I don't know that the average passenger is super aware of that. They're definitely aware at this point of the fines that the FAA has been announcing over the last few weeks. But the zero tolerance policy has really made a difference for flight attendants. It's long been a concern of flight attendants that when people act up on board, there's not real consequences unless it turns into a physical altercation, right, where there's clearly assault and things like that. And before this zero tolerance policy from Administrator Dixon, some of these passengers may have gotten off with a warning or counseling or a second chance. And with this zero tolerance policy, it's making clear to the flying public that if you act up on board, there's going to be consequences on the ground.
And we're talking about some hefty fines here.
Yes. I think the highest fine that they've announced over the last few months has been a Delta Airlines passenger It was $52,000. And granted,
Wow.
this was a situation that went beyond just a mask issue. There was assault of flight attendants. There was charging of the cockpit. So that's one of the most, I think, the highest fine they've ever instituted.
And if someone is so does this on more than one flight, would they be put on the, you know, do not allow this person to fly list?
Yeah. So one of the things that airlines have done during the pandemic is make passengers know that they have an internal no fly list. And before we had the federal mask mandate, I think that's something we all forget. We actually didn't have a federal mask mandate in transportation until February of this year. The previous administration had refused to mandate masks on planes, trains, I guess not automobiles.
No, not yet, anyway.
Buses. but yeah, so we've only had this mask mandate since February. And before that, one of the ways that airlines could enforce or have a clear consequence for not wearing your mask was to put passengers on an internal no-fly list so that at least throughout the course of the pandemic, those passengers would not be allowed to fly that airline. And they have utilized that, airlines across the board. They have been adding passengers throughout the last year to that list.
Are we seeing or are you seeing more flight attendants quitting their job because they just don't want to deal with unruly passengers?
So there's been a combination. There have been a few who've left the job. There's definitely been flight attendants who maybe would have stayed on a few more years and retired, let's say, in 5 years, but they're just done. It's been hard economically. It's been hard mentally to deal with this. And people aren't just simply complying with a simple ask of wearing their mask. And so we've seen that, but we've also seen the airlines have offered certain types of leaves throughout the pandemic in order to combat the economic crisis that we've also faced during this public health crisis. And so what we've seen as well is a lot of flight attendants staying out on some of those leaves to try to ride out some of this pandemic confrontation on board.
And we're almost out of time here, but does that include some kind of mental health support, just the trauma of being in an altercation?
Yes. Our union has for a long time had what we call an employee assistance program, an EAP, and that's separate from the company. A lot of people listening probably are aware of their company EAP, but this is completely separate from the union. And we have served and helped more flight attendants over the last year, 15 months, than in a normal year. So it's definitely taking toll just being out there and being on the front lines of the pandemic, then these types of altercations can become really emotionally and mentally distressing.
We have to leave it there. Taylor Garland, thank you for joining us on Radio Times. She is strategic PR coordinator for the Association of Flight Attendants. And to people who are flying, wear a mask, right, Taylor?
Yes.
Okay, we're going to take a very short break and then talk about the fact that the world is beginning to open up for tourism, for travel, and we've got a guest waiting in the wings. Do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Well, Memorial Day is the unofficial start of summer, and it looks like Americans are ready to hit the road or hop a plane or train and go somewhere. A year of lockdown and restrictions have given many of us a serious case of wanderlust. Travel bookings are up, and if you're trying to rent a car, good luck with that. The pandemic meant airlines cut routes, hotels cut staff, rentals went offline, and bringing that all back to meet the demand is going to take some time. A number of countries are beginning to open their doors to tourists, especially if you are vaccinated. The EU just announced that vaccinated travelers are now welcome, while member countries can decide on their own requirements based on the COVID cases within their borders. And of course, there's a lot to explore in the United States. National parks, theme parks, beach and mountain communities, resorts, big and small cities, something for everyone. We asked Natalie Compton to be our travel guide today on Radio Time. She's staff writer reporting on travel for the Washington Post By the Way section. She joins us from Hawaii, where it is 4 o'clock in the morning. And this is her first major trip in more than a year. Natalie Compton, thanks for, I guess, staying up or getting up so early to join us on Radio Times.
Of course, I'm happy to be here.
So any unruly passengers that you saw on your flight or flights out to Hawaii?
I didn't see any unruly passengers this time. When I flew across the country about 2 weeks ago, I feel like I saw more odd passengers than I saw unruly ones. Some people all rolling their eyes over wearing the mask, but nothing too crazy.
And what's an odd passenger from your point of view?
I mean, for example, some guy put his open coffee cup in the aisle as though no one would knock that over during the flight. Fortunately, no one did. Saw some bare feet, saw people eating odd things. So it's just interesting to be around so many people again.
Have we forgotten how to be out in public? With other people?
We already had issues of people being, quote unquote, themselves on planes. People forget that this is like a waiting room at a doctor's office. This is public. But you're right. We haven't been around people for so long that maybe we are less self-aware of behavior that is odd to other people or uncomfortable for people. I've seen a range of strange masks at the airport or people drinking and being very loud, kind of what your last guest was talking about. Alcohol seems to fuel some strange behavior as well.
And what was it like for you to get, I don't know, did you start in Washington, D.C.? I didn't know where you started. What was it like to get to Hawaii? Were there certain hoops you had to jump through?
Yes. So I was up remote working in Maine last week. So I came from a corner of the United States all the way across. So what you have to do to go to Hawaii right now is you need to get a coronavirus test within 72 hours of your last flight to Hawaii. So for me, it wasn't 72 hours from boarding for JFK. It was 72 hours from my Seattle to Maui leg. What travelers also need to know is that you can't just get a test anywhere. You need to make sure it's a trusted partner with the Hawaii Health Authority. And that is not every place. So people have been put into quarantine when they arrive in Hawaii because they get the wrong test. Wow. And then once you arrive, things are pretty straightforward from there. The word on the street was that Maui was going to require people to get a second test when you arrived. That didn't happen to me. And I'm not sure if that's something that is just having a dodgy rollout or if we will expect that later. But things are changing really quickly here on the ground. They removed the mask mandate for outdoors just yesterday. So we're not sure if all of these restrictions or entry requirements will stay the same forever. It could be that if you're vaccinated, you can just come in.
And would you say Hawaii is like other states in that they've got their own requirements based on whatever COVID protocols they have and also just the number of cases within their state borders?
Yes, Hawaii has been one of the most strict destinations to travel to from a domestic point of view. They are so vulnerable out here and had to be very strict right away. They weren't letting people in without having a 14-day quarantine for a long, long time. Uh-huh. Once they lifted that restriction, they still had these testing requirements that have been a hurdle for people because not everybody wants to go through that. It can be expensive. It can be stressful. But it seems to be helpful, and we'll see if they keep having it, because you're right, the cases are going down everywhere, vaccine rates are higher, so we're in a very different situation than we were even just a month ago.
Now, let me just quickly reintroduce you, and I want to make sure our listeners can join our conversation. That is Natalie Compton, and she's staff writer reporting on travel for the Washington Post's By the Way section. And we're talking about the fact that the world, this country is opening up to tourists, to travelers, and we want to make sure that you have the most up-to-date information so that you can feel safe as you venture out into the world. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can always pick up the phone and call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Now, I do want to move beyond flying in airports, but I am curious about what you saw in the airports that you were in, and were they crowded, and how did they handle security, and sort of what did you see as you were going from one, you know, point A to point B to point C?
It's interesting because throughout the pandemic, we had this image of airports as being ghost towns. And while it is interesting to see that many of the shops in airports might still be closed, they are definitely not empty in terms of passengers passing through. Just yesterday, the TSA recorded more than 1,600,000 passengers going through their checkpoints around the country. We are expecting that number to reach 2 million potentially this weekend, as Memorial Day is such a big travel day. So if you're going to an airport, you can expect to be with many other passengers. That might not translate to long TSA lines. They are hiring many, many, many more people to try to keep up with this new demand. But I would get there early because you never know. Right. Especially, I drove by the airport yesterday in Hawaii and I saw the line to check in go around outside of the airport doors, down the street. So you want to be prepared just in case that happens to you.
I mentioned this in my intro, but is the travel industry, whether it is airlines or car rentals or hotels or anything else, are they ready for this increased demand?
What I've heard from the travel industry insiders that I've spoken with is that nobody expected it to return this fast. We are just running at breakneck speeds right now. So people are clamoring to try to, like you said, staff up. The problem with rental cars is that many of the companies sold off their fleet during the pandemic when they needed quick cash. And now that so many people need rental cars, inventory is very low, demand is very high. So people are experiencing some really high rental car prices. For my trip here, I turned to Turo, which is kind of the Airbnb of rental cars. Mm-hmm. And I found a very reasonable price for that. So you might want to get creative with the ways that you find rental cars because they are very limited right now. And as you had mentioned, hotels and other parts of tourism are also at decreased capacity right now as far as their staff goes. Hotels are saying they can't fully reopen because they don't have the staff to either run it or clean it. Restaurants are operating at reduced capacity because they're still struggling to find staff. So you may find long lines or higher rates at certain things because there's just less available.
Which raises some questions for people that want to travel, myself included, but also I would say the staff of Radio Times and a lot of people in this building, they want to get out into the world. Mm-hmm. And it seems there's so many things that are in play, in flux. It's hard to plan and things can get upended. You know, we can't look too deep into the future to know what travel would be like in, let's say, September. How can people protect themselves against all the variations and variables?
One thing that we have noticed is that the number of travel experts recommending travel insurance is very high, but also the demand for travel insurance is going up. People don't want to be out thousands of dollars if they're trying to plan a big bucket list trip. And you're right, things change on a day-to-day basis. So what stands today may be different tomorrow. A border may close. You may get sick. There are a lot of things that could happen. So travel insurance is one way of protecting yourself. However, you need to make sure that the policy you get actually covers for coronavirus. Uh-huh. A thing that people have been burned by is that the fear of getting coronavirus is not covered. So if you're coming up to a trip to Greece and you're like, oh, I see that case numbers are going up, you can't cancel because you're worried. It can only be if you got sick or a number of other little details. And I think peace of mind can be helpful if you just stay up to date on what's happening in the destination you're trying to travel to. Obviously, right now, domestic travel is probably more of a sure thing than trying to plan something for Europe in the summer, although people are trying. So there are a number of different things you can do, but it could change at any point. So you want to book things that are clearly flexible, read the fine print, know, oh, can I cancel this Airbnb within a certain amount of days before my trip? Can I get my money back on this flight? Because you don't want to be out money.
I was reading and about the travel agents that before the pandemic, people could book things online and use the, you know, digital services, and the travel agents were kind of a dying breed. Are they coming back, and do we need them even more than ever?
It is really the travel advisor world's time to shine, because this is their full-time job to pay attention to all of the things that are changing on a day-to-day basis. They have to know what the requirements are to get to Greece. They have to know whether or not you can get to the Turks and Caicos. So if you're feeling very anxious about travel planning, they are a great resource. And like you said, we kind of thought about this as a dying breed because everybody can book their own travel online. But right now people do want a helping hand, or they want someone who is sending them up to date information or walking them through the testing process before you go to certain places. So they are incredibly helpful right now. And I think a lot of people don't know that not all of them charge money. Sometimes they make money from the other side of the coin, maybe the hotel that you book with, or they could have deals with other travel partners. So it might not be an extra expense for you. And if you're feeling nervous about planning your own travel, you might want to go that route.
I've generally used a travel agent because I don't trust myself putting the right numbers or dates in the correct boxes and don't want to pay that price.
And it's nice once you're on the ground too. It's not just the pre-planning process, but if something goes wrong during your trip, they're going to answer the phone at 2 a.m. and try to help you get what you need or get your test. All these different things can be helpful when you get there too.
Now the EU has, and this was as of this week, has agreed that if you are vaccinated, you can visit Europe without a test or without quarantining. There are some caveats, but Natalie, just walk us through some of what people need to know if they've got their eye on going to Europe.
Right now, if you want to go to some of the European destinations that are open, you will need to test or prove your vaccination. You can go to Greece right now. You can go to Croatia or Iceland. So it's exciting to see those places opening up, and people have been dying to go to Europe throughout the pandemic. It's one of the most popular requests that we get is, can I go to Ireland on this trip? Can I go to Scotland? So like you had mentioned earlier, every member state of the EU gets to pick its own different restrictions. So you may be able to go, but you might have to go through different loopholes to get there. And you just want to make sure that you read everything ahead of time. You keep watching in case that things change, and you want to book flexible travel to get there, because there's a chance that things could change and you might not be able to go on that trip.
I'm looking at an article in today's paper from the Associated Press that the European Union, some Asian governments, and the airline industry are scrambling to develop a so-called COVID-19 vaccine passport to help kickstart international travel. Can you add to that, Natalie?
Sure. Vaccine passports have been this hot topic throughout the pandemic as we start to get our hands on vaccines and start to wonder how can we travel again safely. A lot of people get very flustered at the thought of it. They think it could be discriminatory against people. It could limit some people from traveling. It might feel like you're being forced to get a vaccine. But what the vaccine passports are really shaping out to be is this portable vaccine record, or a record that you've been tested or you recently recovered from COVID. So people just want to know, are you a less risky person to come into our country? And a vaccine passport is a way to try to check that. And lots of different companies, lots of different airlines or countries are creating their own. There's not one leader in the field yet. So there's a chance that you might need to have multiple where you upload your vaccine. The other thing is that they want to find a way that they can verify that information. We already know that people fake things like their vaccine card or fake tests. So they want to make sure, is this legitimate? How can we prove that these people are less risky? So you will probably need a vaccine passport of some kind as you start to travel again internationally.
And if you got a vaccine or got your vaccinations in the United States, you got a little card from the CDC. Is that legit? I mean, someone hand scribbled the date and what vaccine you got. But is that going to open the doors?
You're right. It is just a piece of paper. So it seems kind of wild. I read some stat that a lot of the vaccines around the world, there's no digital record. So that piece of paper might be the only thing that you have. For now, that's what we're working with. They might have something different that you would be able to prove this thing is real later. But right now, what travel advisors and travel experts have told me is that you want to make sure that when you're traveling internationally, you have that original card. Take a picture of it on your phone as a backup and print out copies of it that you don't always have all of them together. This is right. In case you lose your luggage, you still have a copy in your wallet, or you lose your wallet, you still have a copy in your suitcase. So have proof of it. We don't know if it'll change later, but for now you just need that card.
You'd mentioned Iceland and some other countries. Once you get there, can you do the things that we were largely able to do before the pandemic, which is, you know, go to historic sites, go to museums, go to restaurants, hang out in hotels, things like that?
It will be different everywhere you go because every country gets to pick their own way that they protect themselves against coronavirus. Some countries may have more restrictions than others. Right now, in places you might encounter curfews once you arrive. I think that's still the case in France. You might want to do your homework before you go to see, am I comfortable going to XYZ destination if I know the Louvre is closed? If I know that I can't go to my favorite restaurant that I have in that city? Check ahead of time. And a lot of these places will allow you to do reservations ahead of time for things like going to a museum because they are at reduced capacity. So ahead of your trip, you might want to pop in and see, can I get a reservation? If I can't, do I still want to go? And everybody will have different restrictions in terms of mask requirements or social distancing protocols. Everything is stuff that you should work about a review before you go, so you make sure, am I comfortable following these? Will this still be a fun trip if I go? And I think that's why a lot of people are leaning toward destinations where you can be outside a lot. You can know that, oh, I can still go to national parks. I can still do these things that are beautiful and outdoors. A beach is fine versus these big city trips where things could look different.
I'm glad you mentioned the word fun because I think, you know, we're all so worried about staying safe and making sure that we're protecting, you know, the people that we interact with and we are behaving on airlines, all of that, which is, you know, what travel is supposed to be about. I mean, it's more than just fun, but just, you know, expanding our horizons, literally, of the world. Mm-hmm.
And I think we aren't really thinking about it as fun right now. I think a lot of people are seeing travel as a relief or a way to get out of their home environment. It's less of like, woo, I'm going out. It's, I need a break from my normal life and I want to escape. Where can I go and unwind? So places like Belize, the Seychelles, the Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico have been popular. Hawaii, Mexico, the Caribbean, people want to go to a beach and unwind because it is a stressful time just to exist right now.
And that is Natalie Compton, our guest on Radio Times today. She's staff writer reporting on travel for the Washington Post By the Way section. And we are talking about the fact that we are coming up on the summer vacation season. Perhaps you're thinking about travel. You have some questions about travel, how to do it under some of the restrictions that the world is living under. And again, you can join us. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can always call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. This time last year, a lot of us had to cancel our vacation plans because of the pandemic. The good news is that a lot of the world is slowly opening its doors to tourists, especially if you are fully vaccinated. And again, Natalie Compton is helping us understand what we need to know, what we need to do, where we can go. She's a staff writer reporting on travel for The Washington Post. And again, any questions or comments, Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Natalie, I'm curious about Canada. I'm curious about Mexico, our neighbors to the north and south. What do we need to know about how open they are for especially American tourists?
Sure. So Mexico has been an incredibly popular place throughout the pandemic because they didn't stop having Americans come in. If you fly there, places like Cancun, Cabo, Tulum have been incredibly popular with Americans. However, if you were thinking about going, certain places right now, like Cancun, are seeing a rise in cases. So you might encounter like curfews or different restrictions when you get there. You want to do your homework ahead of time. But yeah, Mexico is fair game for people. And as far as Canada goes, that is not the case. We're still in about a 15-month hiatus from being able to go there. And people are waiting for that. We get a lot of emails about, can I go to Canada at this time? I think they just keep reviewing it every couple of weeks and see, can we make this happen right now? There's no update yet. Can you go soon?
So essentially Canada's closed to what, the rest of the world or just Americans or?
Yeah, right now Canada is pretty much closed, I believe, to the rest of the world as well, but definitely for Americans. And it's an interesting time because you're, you know, so close, but yet so far.
What about family vacations? And of course, you know, families who have been especially separated because of the pandemic, they want to get together. You know, maybe grandmom and grandpop are vaccinated, but the grandkids are not. I realize you're not a public health expert, Natalie, but nonetheless, some things to think about when it comes to family vacations.
Sure. One of the most popular ways people want to travel right now is to get back with their loved ones. People have been separated for so long. You really want to go. What public health experts have told me is that as long as you are vaccinated, that is protecting you. If you have concerns about your unvaccinated niece or nephew or person in the group, that's a different story. But as long as you're vaccinated, you're in a better spot. You could still try to encourage people that you're traveling with to do more things outdoors or wear masks if you're inside together. I know that that can get very tedious and not everybody wants to do that all the time. But if you're worried about the unvaccinated person's health or if there's a chance that they could spread it to someone else, then you have to keep that in mind as you plan those group trips.
Americans are notorious, even before the pandemic, for not using all their vacation days. And I think compared to our European counterparts who, you know, have what looks like these lovely month-long vacations during August, Americans are, and frankly, not everyone gets paid time off. So we need to recognize that. But nonetheless, a lot of people leave that stuff on the table.
It's pretty amazing how many Americans let their vacation time go. And you're right. If you live in France or Italy, you're getting ample vacation time every year. And it sounds pretty dreamy to me. But a lot of Americans do not take it. We have this hustle culture where, you know, working more is seen as a positive trait and people might feel pressure not to take time off. I've heard from people this year, now that travel is more possible, people do want to take that time off finally. Maybe they've accrued a lot since last year. Their company allowed them to roll it over to this year. They're finally feeling like, okay, I need a break and I'm going to take one. But a lot of people are feeling guilty about it. We're starting to go back into the office. We feel like we've been away from the office, even though we've probably been working more than ever at home. So people really do need to take that break because it really is nice. If you have the luxury of having vacation time, you should definitely take it.
Right. And I'm feeling guilty just because not everyone gets paid time off, right?
Yeah, that is what one traveler told me. She was feeling like, oh, if I travel to these places where people don't get time off, where people aren't vaccinated, that was something that was causing her guilt. You might feel guilt to the rest of your team that now you're putting more work onto them as you're gone. Yeah. And you're right. A lot of people are feeling guilt like, I still have a job. Should I be taking a vacation while other people are still trying to figure out unemployment? So there's a lot of different things that are causing people a lot of different emotions. But a lot of people feeling very excited about the promise of travel again and finally taking some time off.
Are you getting a lot more traffic questions at the Washington Post?
I haven't gotten a lot of traffic questions, although I do know that AAA is expecting this weekend to be just insane compared to last year. They're expecting some 37 million people traveling within at least 50 miles of their house or more. So that's 60% more than we saw last year. It's still short of what we saw in 2019, but you can expect way more people on the road this weekend than we have at other points of the year. So I would keep traffic in mind as you're planning some of your road trips.
And make sure that you fuel up before you go. I was reading about some, you know, shortages and high prices for fuel in some parts of the country.
We did go through that. It does seem like that is calming down. We had that cyber attack of a pipeline that turned into this kind of chaos of people panic buying a lot of gas, people filling up plastic bags or like plastic tubs with gasoline because they thought they needed to. That wasn't the case. It was kind of like the same thing as the toilet paper shortage of early pandemic days. And it seems to be calming down. However, people are saying that gas prices are going up, so you might notice that as you start to take road trips.
What about the cruise industry? And we certainly know from early on, I hate to keep referencing the pandemic, but I think, you know, we're still dealing with the fallout from all of that. But we certainly know about early on in the pandemic, some of these cruise lines were really hit hard by COVID-19. How about the cruise industry? Is it back or does it look different from how it looked a year or two ago?
It certainly looks different. they have also been under this 15-month now pause because the CDC has really been strict with how they reopen and when they think that will be safe to reopen. You will remember that at the beginning of the pandemic, there were just insane situations going on different cruise ships of people being quarantined on ships off of Oakland and having outbreaks on board that then we assume went into the United States and were a big problem. So there was a big nightmare in the cruise industry at the beginning of this. They are really saying that they are going to be very safe as people return. They're implementing these new cleaning procedures. Many cruise lines are saying that they need to have all of their passengers vaccinated or all of their staff vaccinated. Maybe passengers have to test before they come on. We do know that just, I think it was yesterday, Celebrity Cruise said that they are going to be the first American cruise line to start from the U.S. and they're going to come back in June.
Wow.
And you will not believe the demand of people who want to get back on cruises. Cruise lines are experiencing they have lists of 250,000 people who want to get back on cruise ships and they're just dying to get back on. And it was a very popular way to travel for many people. And there's nothing really like it to take its place for now.
That's fascinating. I mean, and it just shows you that people want to get out and about, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
We got in the habit, I think, of what are called often staycations, the idea of just not going to work, but staying home. And I think with people being stuck at home, all of a sudden this idea of a staycation doesn't have that same allure. What are your thoughts about that, Natalie?
I do think there is something very special about checking into a hotel or an Airbnb that is different from your space. So if you're somebody who's still feeling uncomfortable about traveling somewhere far away or even to a close by city, a staycation still might be very nice. You maybe get an Airbnb that has a pool. You don't have a pool at your house. Or there are hotels that are very lovely and you feel good to be there. I am probably in the camp that if I'm going to be spending money on travel, I'd like to go somewhere different. Yeah. But I do think a place with like a big giant bathtub sounds pretty dreamy.
It sure does. And for Airbnbs, how have they done, again, under the pandemic? And what are they looking forward to?
Very early on last year, they rolled out this very strict new cleaning procedure, this enhanced cleaning protocol that they wanted people to do if they were hosts. And that gave customers this rest assured you will be walking into a clean place where, I mean, you hoped for that before, but now, you know, places have a clean certification on their site. So you can be like, oh, I know that this person is following very strict cleaning protocols. Now that we know that air transmission is really the bigger issue, I don't think people are as concerned about like walking into an Airbnb and wiping everything down, but they have remained very popular, especially for people who aren't feeling great about going into a hotel where you might be encountering crowds. An Airbnb can be very private where you're getting your own space and not having to go through a lobby or something. They've been very popular. However, in the last couple weeks, we've been seeing these tweets go viral and posts go viral about people complaining about the high fees that you'll see associated with
this. I saw that. Yeah, I saw that.
So Airbnb says they're going to try to address this. I have noticed this as well. When you go to book something, you're like, all right, the rate's $100. And then somehow by the end of the trip, it seems like that rate was three times more based on the fees. So you'll want to make sure that you're looking at the final price of the Airbnb before you book it and not just the daily rate, because it is potentially going to jump up a lot. All the fees vary between properties. So one place might have a higher cleaning fee than the other. You may be able to find something that is better for your budget.
Are those fees all listed, or are they kind of buried in some of the verbiage?
I think Airbnb does a pretty good job of showing you what the total price is. I have also noticed that they have different prices. If you want to book now, pay in full, or book with a flexible booking, might have a little higher price, but everything is pretty transparent there. I know some sites it might be more difficult to notice. I was browsing through VRBO the other day, Vrbo, if you will, and saw that they had a little asterisk that said this final price does not include tax. And I'm kind of like, well, why not? Why didn't you just show me what the final price would be? So make sure not all sites will be the same. Make sure you're seeing the exact total final price before you book.
people living in the Philadelphia area, we go down the shore, which is how we say it. We go down to the New Jersey shore. And there are lots of beaches there that we can enjoy. Are there certain favorite, you're in Hawaii, are there certain favorite beaches, Natalie, that you have enjoyed that you would recommend?
Oh my gosh. Well, I just arrived, but I have been enjoying the beaches along Kihei, where I found my rental spot near. Any place that you go in Hawaii is going to be a pretty dreamy destination. But how do you choose where you go on the Jersey Shore?
Well, I go. This is just Long Beach Island, which is just something that my husband's family went to when he was a kid. And we just kept that tradition going. And just it's close and we know where everything is. And it sort of hasn't changed. I mean, every now and then you'll see multi-million-dollar houses going up. but there's still some of the same spots that were there, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago.
It's nice to have that familiarity when you go to a place, especially if you're traveling and you're kind of like, I just want to unwind. You don't want to try to figure out where's a good restaurant. Even if you are used to going to the same place year after year, hopefully people are booking ahead of time because we've seen a big beach house surge. So a lot of people are experiencing very limited inventory and maybe not getting the places that they normally get.
What I miss is flying to a city that I've never been before and not knowing where anything is and then just exploring and getting lost and then getting found and just immersing myself in a place that is so unfamiliar. Maybe I don't know the language. I don't know where anything is.
There is something very exciting about that. And I think with the pandemic, we knew what every day was going to look like. For many of us who had to work at home, that was the case. You were like, I wake up. I open my laptop in my bed and I start working. When you travel, there's something so magic about getting off the plane, getting into a taxi, not knowing anything that you're looking at, and going into a new place to learn more things. So I 100% know what you're talking about, and I miss all that too. I've gotten a taste of that here in Hawaii, which has been nice, and I feel very fortunate to get to dip my toe into travel again.
You had mentioned some Caribbean countries earlier. You mentioned Puerto Rico. Are you seeing more interest in some of these locales that are islands but closer to the United States?
Puerto Rico had an incredible demand recently over spring break. It was incredibly popular. Flight prices there were incredibly jaw-droppingly cheap. So we saw that was incredibly popular. You do need to get tested before you go, but unlike some international destinations like Mexico or places in the Caribbean, you don't need to take a test to get back into the United States. I think that's something that's also...
Well, they are the United States, right? I mean, that helps, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because it's a domestic destination, you don't have to worry about it. But it feels far away and very lovely. So people have been really enjoying going there. Puerto Rican locals have felt very mixed about that surge of tourism because not everybody was coming and following local protocols. They had curfews, and a lot of people were noticing that maybe somebody who lived there locally was getting hit with fines for not following those protocols where a tourist was allowed to walk around and break the rules. I think that is kind of evening out as vaccines rise and people are feeling a little more safe and the restrictions are easing up, but it has been incredibly popular. There have also been interesting interests that are higher than they were in 2019 than they are now. Places like Montana and Wyoming, for example, are way more popular than they were before. So it's interesting to see some of these new darlings of travel emerge because people are looking at domestic destinations instead.
Well, and wonderful parks there, too. We're almost out of time here, Natalie, but just, you know, give a shout out to our park system.
Big shout out to our park system. Yeah.
I mean, just because they're so plentiful and everyone is so different.
Right. They are very magical things that we have in our backyard. A lot of people need to know that there are certain parks that are requiring reservations this year. Yosemite, for example, some parks like Halekulea here, you need a reservation to go see the sunrise. So before you get in the car and drive 10 hours to your favorite national park, make sure that you don't need a reservation or you've made a reservation. We're seeing record numbers at national parks, so you want to make sure you're ready.
Well, we're going to leave it there. Natalie Compton, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you.
and she's staff writer reporting on travel for the Washington Post By the Way section. And we began talking about unruly passengers on airplanes. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out more about the program. You can always download a podcast of the show wherever you get your podcasts. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, Kelsey Hansen, and Paige Murray Bessler. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you for joining us.